My name is Kyle. I am once again with Danny. Not a robot yet, still a human, right? You're still good?
On the inside.
On the inside. Okay. All right. So on the inside, you know. But we are going back through Dawn of X. We can't say that. No, like we got like three to five more issues before we can't say Dawn of X anywhere, right? We have to say it's fucking, I don't want to say it. You say it. I don't want to say it.
Empire?
We had seen no, fuck Empire. Not Empire. The other one.
Oh, the Sword of X?
Ten of Swords?
Sort of. I thought we were gonna. This was gonna be a good podcast.
I had to talk about the elephant in the room.
You're starting right, off heavy.
Yeah, though. Yeah. It's let's heavy. cut to three, cut to like five podcasts from now. Welcome back, folks. We are diving deep into Ten of X. Oh my God, I'm dying over here. Danny, are you? Danny's dead. Oh shit. Fuck. It's just me. Sorry, folks.
Every time I'll hear it, I'll be like, what kind of prank are we? It's like we've now like picked up the mantle of trolling ourselves on his behalf now.
We're self-deprecating.
It's like that scene. In the Da Vinci Code where he's like whipping himself.
This kind of feels like an exercise in self-mutilation in many ways, because I don't know how to feel about Excalibur anymore. And the only reason why we are still talking about Excalibur is simply because of Ten of Swords coming up soon, which ties deeply into it. Good job, Marvel. Good marketing job making us still pay attention to this issue. Because boy, am I not entertained whatsoever anymore with this. I don't know about you. I am deeply, deeply annoyed by the lack of character development. We're just kind of hanging around most of the time. We mentioned it as we talked throughout Excalibur, you know, issue one, issue two was great. Issue three through issue five, we saw a lot of repeat. And the problem is the same thing. I just saw a lot of hanging around, and we could have got issues three through five and maybe an issue and a half, you know?
It plateaued very quickly.
Yeah. And I'm seeing a lot of that now that we're rounding out. We're rounding out seven, going into the new arc. We're in eight, and we're still seeing that. We're still seeing a lot of that. We're just kind of hanging out. And it's too subtle of a character development for me. What is hanging out with the chateau, whatever, this guy and this dude that transforms into vines. Mm-hmm. And hangs out with werewolves. Like, what value does this serve? Yeah, thank you, Bloodstone. What purpose does this serve? Not what purpose does this serve? Because it could have served a great purpose. It could have served a great 3 to 4 page purpose. What purpose does it serve as a whole issue? Danny, answer this question in a haiku now.
I couldn't muster something like that for this. There's no emotion behind it. I need drive to do poetry. I'm lifeless on this.
Yes.
I had to go back to the other issue to verify that I wasn't making a mistake, because when I started reading this, I thought I was reading issue seven. And I was like, oh shit, they're doing the stuff of the Bloodstone hunt at his manor, and they're finishing that stuff off. Mm-hmm. Oh, I get it. This is how issue eight starts. But I was for sure thought I was still reading issue seven by mistake, and I had to keep double checking, because I'm like, didn't we read this? Like, isn't this over? Like, this is still going on. And then it wasn't until halfway through the issue where I realized, okay, I hadn't actually read this, because it had been so long since we'd actually read an Excalibur
issue. It's been two cycles, right?
Yeah, we've gone through a lot, and they've introduced a lot of single issues, like one shots, like giant sizes and things like that for different characters. So this started to get more displaced as time went on, and instantly I felt like, I'm like, oh shit, like I'm literally in the last issue, my bad. And I'm like, no, I'm not wrong. It's just this shit is still dragging on. Like, it's not moving forward. It's still stuck in like the story it's trying to tell, and it's so slow at telling the progression that it's not really moving. It almost felt like this hunt started like 3 issues ago. It almost feels like, I might be wrong. I know at least 2 prior to this. You could say 3 now, including this, but that's such a stagnant progression that it hurts everyone's character development, and mostly Betsy, the poor sacrificial lamb of this entire series. Shoehorned in as the lead, but never really given the justice she's deserved.
Yeah, I want to read Tini Howard's script. I bet you the script is awesome, and I have a feeling we're just getting like snippets of the script, you know, because what's happening? Nothing's happening, right? So the only thing that could particularly happen in this situation is an internal struggle, you know, things happening in their minds and their thoughts. I have a feeling that Tini Howard wrote awesome internal struggles with all these characters that are just like cut. So this story, I believe,
world building, beautiful world building. I get you. Yeah,
beautiful world never building. Never made it. Right? You know, never made it. I bet you this would make an excellent light novel. And you know what? I had no desire of taking the conversation here until this moment. But why don't Marvel do things that like Shonen does and things in Japan? Why don't they make light novels? This would have made an excellent light novel. And based off of the interviews we heard with Tini Howard, she sounds like an awesome fantasy writer. Like, I'm not going to deny her writing skills whatsoever, but what I'm seeing and what I'm getting is not that whatsoever in Excalibur.
Like, so, they should do an entire volume based on just this hunt, draw out the mansion, write this character development around the magic and the druids and all the stuff that's being done over this, and make it fit in its own kind of story and not make it feel like it's just a rushed along, like, Scooby-Doo episode. Like, that's what this feels. It's like a fucking Scooby-Doo episode.
It really does. It really does. Like, a little angstier, I guess. A little bit more angst, but yeah, it does feel like a Scooby-Doo. Now, let's go back to the idea of the light novel, because, like, I want to play with this idea a little bit more. Like, right. Would you, as a consumer, I pitch you the idea of, like, the X-Men and the light novel, and it's a compendium to Dawn of X, this current arc now, and you get stories from Tini Howard, you get stories from our boy, what's his name, writer of Wolverine, Benjamin Percy, because Percy has written Wolverine the Long Trail, which is a podcast. You should go check out the podcast. It's pretty cool, you know. It's kind of
delightful.
yeah, it's a little, you know, it plays it safe, but it's pretty solid storytelling, honestly. Check it out. So, like, long form, Percy would be awesome. I think Tini Howard would be awesome. I think Hickman would be awesome in long form. I can't speak for, you know, I think maybe Dugan could be good in long form. I can't
take long enough to write out his stories, so yeah.
Like a compendium, like a 200-page light novel between these four writers.
They used to do that during the 90s. You would get those. They even had, right? Like, your crossover books where it was like the Star Trek meets X-Men. Planet X. Read the novel, and you're like, okay.
Like, especially with what we're seeing with what Hickman's doing throughout Dawn of X, throughout House of X, Powers of X, we're reading a comic, and he took a page out of the comic to go, hold on, I know we're reading a comic, but we're going to read a page of just words for a second, because I have a lot to explain to you. So I feel like people are on board for that. You know, I think it would sell. I think it would sell is what I'm saying. And I think it's a new like shift that maybe Marvel should consider. Like, think about the old Star Wars books. They were great before it got cannibalized.
There was this book that I remember a while back that J.J. Abrams was showing off on like Colbert back when he was on Comedy Central. Mm-hmm. That him and the guy who played Parkman actually co-wrote and like worked on it with him. It was funny. But it was like a book about a book being like etched in and like reread and like highlighted and marked down by like a time travel. Like there's like two, there's like the story in the book, and then there's the person that like borrowed the book technically before you. They like marked it up with things and like notes and all these other crazy things. And it's like that takes a book and what's going on in just the story and turns it into something that's a little more unique, a little more engrossing. It pulls the reader. It makes it more involved. It becomes almost like different than just a book now. It almost becomes a game. It almost becomes like you're interactive and playing a game. And I like that. I do enjoy that. It's almost going back to even like the Goosebumps stuff where it's a choose your own path.
Sure. Like
that extra bell and whistle on top of the story is always appreciated. And I feel like Hickman does that to this comics very well and adds that kind of vibe. And we could get a lot more out of that if he wrote like a whole compendium. My goodness, it would be great. Like, he already has the notes for it. Like all this stuff goes on the cutting room floor.
I mean, like how much would you personally pay to read a Hickman short story? We'll say this short story is about 20 to 100 pages. It could be anywhere within that realm.
Oof, I probably to own it, I would, I'd be willing to pay probably like if it was new, even hot off the press, I'd do $50.
That's a lot. That's a lot for a short story. Think about a short story. Short stories don't even get published too much.
But how often does Jonathan Hickman write short stories about X-Men? If it's like an X-Men short story that's limited edition written by Hickman just once, like I'd probably...
Let's change the game. Marvel's just like, just start writing books. And you know, you get 21 pages, you know, 23 pages, right? Typical, your average comic. And they're all like, instead of words, just write, or instead of pictures, just write words for 27 pages. For 27 pages of a floppy, how much? I guess you would pay $5, right? Your average floppy.
Well, then it becomes a thing of convenience. Like, if it's not a collector thing that I want to shoot for and just get I just want to read it, I'd probably just pirate an audio version. I'd just get an audio book and just
listen. That's the thing, right? So now it's a different form of consumption, right?
Yeah, because I'm in it. Yeah, artwork is half the draw in comic book collecting.
Let's exactly, yeah. We took it.
Half the draw. How many comic books have you bought just because of the cover?
So many.
Yeah, right. There's got to be at least there've been times where you know what? I don't even really care. Like this cover is so awesome. I have to get it. I'm getting it. Like I appreciate this. This is awesome in so many ways, and the detail and quality is there. Like you come across like a random like floppy of like Alex, like something done by Alex Ross. And you're like, that just looks cool. I can print that shit.
Oh, yeah.
That will look nice. So that's just the draw for some of that. Where then it becomes like just this kind of like doled down script of just these stories, it might become something that's interesting to know, to play to the canon and build the story in the world, but not as much for the collectible end or just even the consumption end, because I'd much rather throw it on like an audiobook and, you know, do my laundry or, you know, organize my comic book while listening to the actual audiobook of that. See, that's good synergy right there.
Gotta maximize that dopamine. I understand your pain. Speaking of covers, what do you think of this cover of Excalibur? I like the concept.
I first thought it was ridiculous because of just like how funny it looks, but then I appreciated it due to the iconography of it being a throwback to Days of Future Past.
I think if Apocalypse wasn't there, I would be more on board with it. It feels...
I did not like it that maybe shoehorned in. Like, what was that about? Like, why did they shoehorn?
Tell me that story.
I almost thought it would be perfect if it didn't have him. If they put maybe somewhere
exactly.
else.
That's my exact feeling.
Because there's no way this dude like beat up.
Nah, not happening. What?
Not even on his best day. He loses to Richter on like any given day.
Right? Yeah.
Richter used to be one of those like bumbling like the Brotherhood of Mutant characters like Toad. Even though he is way more powerful than Toad, it's just like, oh, it was just Toad and Bob and Richter's here. We'll just have Wolverine take him out. Or like one Colossus has got this.
Yep.
Yep. Solo. So it's just no way that they're going to beat Apocalypse. It's just not happening. But, you know, they always take those liberties and those kind of poetic licenses with their covers. So I appreciate the nod back to Days of Future Past, but having Apocalypse there over shoulder just looks kind of funny.
It's weird. Yeah, yeah,
that episode of Simpsons where like Homer has Mr. Burns' head like sewn on. They got the two heads. That's what it looks like. His second head's just Apocalypse. Imagine if you wake up and Apocalypse is sewed onto your body. Just
that. Right?
I'd probably be pretty... I'd be shocked, but I'd also be, like, optimistic. I'd be like, okay, where's this going? Like, what do we do now?
You can think.
You want to do, Apocalypse? Like, I don't know about this, but, I mean, I'm sure you got a game plan here. You don't expect me to make all the choices.
Right?
Yeah.
All right. So, are you ready to dive into Excalibur? Good sir.
Crazy enough, the cover is probably one of the better parts of the issue.
It is.
Even with that weird like kind of illustration circumstance, it's still. Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's dive into this.
Yeah. So we start back on the estate. Some werewolves noshing on a bunny. That bunny's fucked. It's done.
He's limp.
It's over. They're not. He's one of them's. One of them's getting down out of it. And then they hear a noise. They hear a rumble.
Yeah. It almost to me sound like an old car. I guess it's supposed to be like an earthquake, but it just came across as some sort of older kind of beat Ford car from like the 1940s.
Yeah, they scatter. They literally say scatter too when that happens, and we get just like a big boom as like we get like these vines and like vines and you know, foliage all over the place, and
earth and vines battling each other essentially.
Yeah, and we're getting a lot of Richter, and we're getting a lot of what's the dude's name again? The owner of the estate,
Colin Bloodstorm.
Bloodstone. Yeah, we're getting a lot of those two pretty much taking the heed of everything. Now, one thing I'm disappointed about is at the end of Excalibur issue number 7, he was on this awesome horse that his eyes were on fire and stuff. Where's that horse? That horse is gone in this issue. No more.
That's why I was confused too. It felt like we had finished it. Like they've gone through with the horse and it showed up and something happened and then we got the fight. Like, but it seems like it skipped over all of that, and for some reason I connected it in my mind. So where did the fucking horse go? Why was it that show?
Right.
I want flaming horse fighting. You're gonna show me flaming horse, right? I want it to fight. It's Chekhov's gun. If you're gonna show me the horse, use the goddamn
Chekhov's gun. Yes, great. Example. So as this attack happens, we get some banter, some sexy banter between Colin and Richter, right? And he's just like, hit me. He probably said it in his best Batman voice, I imagine.
Yeah, he was talking a lot of shit to him, and it seems like Bloodstone was not really able to even raise a candle in this fight until like the end when he tried to pull some like shifty stuff, and Betsy was like, okay, I'm just gonna attack you once it's over. Can we just talk?
Can we just talk? Let's just talk. Come on.
It's just instantly like, okay. And it just got civilized. They went from like aggressive to zero in like nothing. Like, I stopped a dime.
Absolutely nothing. He's just like, I actually have dinner prepared. Let's go.
flustered sometimes. I'm sorry, you know. It's a, okay. Well, still, what happened to the fucking horse?
Yeah, what happened to the fucking horse, man? The eyes and everything. It was awesome. It's gone. It's gone. I want to know. I want to know.
You know, no one's gonna know. That's that thing's gone. That's been written out. It's that level of connectivity, though, that hurts a lot of these stories. I've said it in other issues that kind of start to lose their luster like this. It's just almost insulting. Like, it's a, you want me to read it, but you don't want me to follow it. Is it, what am I, why am I reading it then?
Exactly. Exactly. So,
let's check out this murderer's row of talent here.
Sure, sure. Before we get to that, let's read the preface. Civility, charged by Apocalypse to retrieve strange components for necessary ritual, Excalibur went on the hunt, chasing down the last remaining werewolves at Cullen Bloodstone's family hunting lodge. Was going well enough until the team's unsupporting contact brought out Cullen's less gracious side. And we get the cast. Let's talk about why Shogo's here. And I don't think I seen Shogo. Was Shogo in this?
Okay, I think there was a moment where
Shogo... There was a Summers kid in this. And they're not mentioned, but we got Shogo mentioned.
There was Shogo mentioned, but Shogo doesn't have a physical appearance in this issue, and that's what confuses me as well. I didn't get that either. Because I glanced at this earlier before actually reading it, and then I remember coming back to it and going like, wait, Shogo wasn't even in any of the panels I looked at. What the fuck is going on with Shogo? And then I'm like, okay, they reference him, but... What does that matter? Like, they reference a lot of people and a lot of things. Like, this thing should be like probably 15 people long.
It should. There's a lot more.
Where's Rachel?
Rachel Summers. Come on.
Is going on? Like, okay, so Rachel Summers is less important than Shogo. That's the world. That's the current status quo here. You're trying to tell me?
Yeah. Yeah,
I feel like this panel might have even been made, like this introductory might have been made before the issue even was finished. Like at one point, they're like, we're going to put you. So? And they just went, they never did. And they're, fuck it, we'll leave it. Mm. We'll just go on. Why do we need to change? No one's going to notice. They probably don't even remember the fucking horse.
Good job. Good job, Marvel, doing your work. Yeah. You, what do you got? Like a couple billion dollars, but that's fine. It's cool. Take a day off, I guess.
How you let this happen, Hickman? Revolt.
For real. All right. So I guess everything's fine, right? So they just go hang out and they go get food, right? And we get
timesies.
Right?
We're taking a time out. Everyone just relax.
He's like, I think we got off on a bad start. That's on me, you know. And he's just trying to get into his own thing, and he's just all like, to civility after a lot of hostility. This is so confusing. Mixed messages. Let's talk about mixed messages.
I was thinking they're gonna get poisoned right away. I'm like, this is some fucking like tusk slash like the human centipede kind of shit where he's like, right? Eat this food. Eat this food in this manner. I'm like this really like scary, you know, androgynous dude over here that like could have, you know, poisoned your drinks, maybe your food or anything. I was just about to kill you a few seconds ago, but eat. Disability. Right. I have a skull and bones pin on my lapel of my suit.
It's so weird.
That's a blood red suit. look at the char cuffs he's got though. He's got the gold on red there. That's Zeon. Mm-hmm. That's char. That's all
yeah,
char.
Yeah, has Zig Zeon. Yeah, for Zig sure. Zeon
indeed.
Charby Dand.
Yeah, Susumu. That's interesting though. But see, that's even less reasons to trust him. Char killed almost everybody he betrayed.
Everyone, come on. Yeah. Nazis, they're space Nazis. Let's be real.
That's how he made his way up the corporate ladder. He's that way. I'm down.
But Betsy's cool with it. She's cool. She's just like, thank you for the lovely sentiment. Thank you for dinner. And he's cool. Everyone's cool. We get a Jubilee kind of cheer. She's kind of like hesitant, right? She's like, do we think that's fair? That's that sentiment, right? No parasite.
They're waxing and waning, like the differences between, it becomes this weird sociological like deep dive into, okay, I'm a mutant, like my powers are attached to who I am, mm-hmm. and it's a part of me. You are possessed by a quasi demon like parasite. Like, are you saying that we're the same? Like, what are you trying to say?
Yeah, what's happening? What's going on?
We're totally the same. Like, let's just play it fair. Like, I will use my demon powers. You will use your whatever your mutant stuff is. Jubilee's like, what do you mean by mute stuff? It's funny. It's like an awkward conversation at a dinner table between like some young person and their like weird uncle. And they're just arguing about two different generational views that never line up. He's like, you don't understand, like, I've been oppressed. He even takes it that way later on, but he's just like, I'm possessed by this demon. It's difficult. I'm just trying to be fair. I know I almost killed you, but I still want to play this game as fair as possible. It always seems like they're putting on airs for lunacy's sake. Like, everyone's just playing crazy.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, are they playing chicken even? Like, you could say they're waiting for one to just, like, because it seems everyone's very passive and just okay, like they're suspicious, but they're suspicious as they're clearly being tricked. It's almost as like you're like, okay, I see that you have qualms with what's happening. Like, that's okay. Like, chase that. Like, chase, follow that. Don't just pick up the gun and put it in your head. Yeah. I swear that's not loaded. Like, watch, point at your brain, and you're like, all right, I'll trust you. So they eat the food, and they're having this weird banter about what it is being a mutant versus a demon parasite, and he's just like, hey man, I'm just trying to just like, you know, extend the olive branch. I know I tried to kill you, but you should just take this olive branch anyway.
Take it.
The fucking head with the olive branch, and they take it. They do.
They do. Fucking take, they eat that shit.
Nothing. They eat the food. They take the fucking olive branch. And this is one of the times where like Jubilee might be the only one who's kind of onto something for me, right? Even though she's like, she in like a really weird, like, cliche kind of way.
It's hostile and very juvenile, but like, she's probably making the most sense in this moment.
It's like one of those people that gets typecasted that look very youthful, so they play the gambit from like teenager to like early 30s or late 30s. And like, as they're writing her, they're like, yeah, Jubilee can kind of play any narrative, and we're just going to move that bar up and down whenever we need her. One moment she's like a mother, and then another moment you would never believe she even had a kid. Like, she seems like she's still in high school. It's funny. Yeah. It's hard to follow Jubilee's character development too. That's another issue that's separate from how the character development messes with Betsy and some of the other people.
Yeah, Betsy's a whole different story, but Jubilee, man, boy, was that getting dissected beyond belief throughout this, right? Like, who is she? Is she? She's being used for whatever feeling she needs to feel in the moment.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like there's more of a seat to what Jubilee's character is and who she really is defined as. When she was a vampire, that was weird, but that still defined her pretty heavily, and she stuck to that theme and like how her opinions and her choices are made. Now it feels like she changes like age and opinions and kind of aggressiveness as things go on, and her responsibility shifts real quickly. It's hard to put a pin on it, like define, okay, where is Jubilee coming from? What is her character? How does she gonna end in all this? And what's her mannerisms? Like, I get the Jubilee in the X-Men animated series better than I get this Jubilee.
Yeah,
and that was just the character, but that was simple. I mean, these aren't layers. It almost just feels like it's a character fit all situation.
A little bit. Yeah. A little bit. I don't know. It's weird.
Even with Shogo not being in the issue, that was the one big tie that kind of helped her fit. Her baby was a dragon, and they wrote on it, so that made sense. She fit. The baby dragon's gone, so Jubilee really doesn't fit in what's going on as much.
Doesn't feel like it. Feels a little forced. Feels...
And that's the sad thing about her character development, because then she's propped up by that character. She needs to rest on that dragon. Where it's not like Lockheed's its own character in itself, and so is Kitty. Like, they don't need to rest on each other. They're great when they combo, but it's not, she's not holding him up or he's holding her.
No, not at all. Yeah. Unfortunate. Fuck, man. You don't have to do this. You don't have to do this. But we go to a letter to the noble Homo sapiens of Britain by the Bloodstone Estate or executive thereof. And it's more or less addressing the Commonwealth and telling them about more or less, hey, man, this power, this Krakoa, they were nobody, and now they're everything. And we need to be what? We got to pretty much, we need to be on the defensive now because of it. More or less. And it's looking for support of all the supernatural families. I think that's the call to action, right?
Yeah, they're pretty trying much to tug at all the magical Arthurian-based legendary characters of the Marvel mythos. So all those things are going to come out of the woodwork. Because this is it. This is like the Declaration of Independence or some sort of proclamation being put up by like Martin Luther. This is the one that the stone being cast that sets forth sort of X, and I'm calling it sort of X. and this is what it is. Is they're like, look at this world building. We're putting out down the foundation. All the magic people are going to come out, and we're going to have a big magic fight. But see, it's this kind of X-Men versus Avengers, Inhuman versus X-Men versus Ghostbusters, or whoever, whatever the people are going to be. It's not gonna play out as a good, fulfilling story. It's kind of the problems that even Civil War couldn't get it right, and Civil War got the closest, but still didn't work. Too messy. And then they tried to build on it with Civil War II, and it was like, whoa, you just like doubled down. Like, maybe Civil War II comic book moment is mirrored perfectly by X-Men Last Stand and X-Men Dark Phoenix. It was like they made literally the same mistake.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I get it. I get the comparison.
Yeah, it's right there. So it's like they're already trying to build this like two sides. It's some sort of intro cutscene to an X-Men arcade game where you like got them all plastered and laid out. Like, look, it's Doctor Strange is joining them because he's got magic. We rope him into this. Look at him. He's ready to punch Charles Xavier in the face. Why? I don't know. Like, why are they both cocked back and ready to punch each other?
Right?
It's not what either of them really do. But apparently this summer, get ready. Sword of 10 times sadness.
10 of all the swords of all your dreams. Fuck. I don't know. No.
The narrative is weak. It's like he just wrote a letter. He just wrote like a letter out, and he said, I just want to let everyone know, like, yeah, the mutants, they're taking over. We should be, just the magic people should be together and stand from the name of Britain. Doesn't that sound like a good idea? And everyone is going to follow through with that and be fine. They're like, that's good enough. That's good enough. That's a good starting point, right? We're good. We're all good. All right, cool.
And we're good.
And the stone is cast, and that's it. That's why I'm so repulsed by this, because it's the stone being cast here that we have to accept. It's like, yeah. You know, the event is happening. It's beginning. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
This is, we were out of it before. Now we're in it. We are in the sword. The sword realm. We're 10 times in the sword.
10 times. Written by Ruben Brissau, Covenant Cabo, London. Look at that fake ass handwriting.
Yeah.
Way to make a computer font make your handwriting. Come on, just get like Hickman or someone to just write that name out.
Couldn't they? Like, I mean, they have all these, there's so many people working on this issue with art backgrounds. Like, they couldn't have got one of them.
Right? One person
out of the nine inkers you're using on this, you have nine different people inking this thing.
Ridiculous. Whatever. But we cut to fucking the druid himself, Richter, hanging out outside of Jubilee's
Julie's window, just in her windsuit.
Hanging on the
roof. He climbed in her window just now, and he's been chilling there. But it seems like he's comfortable. So, like, he climbed in, sat down, got comfortable, and then tried to wake her up from afar. Like a fucking
from afar, yeah.
Just the weirdest, like, way to wake up someone you know. Like, when he's just not gonna
just fucking... like hanging out by the window. She's like 5 feet away.
He's just watching her like long.
Right.
Now we begin like the most non-ancillary scene to the entire issue.
All right, yeah. So let's go into this. Fucking Richter heads out, you know, does his thing.
He wakes her up, though. He wakes her up.
He wakes her up. So he wakes her up, and he's just like, yo, hey, I woke you up to say, I'm going to go walk around.
Can't sleep. I'm going to walk around in the dirt.
Yeah. And she's just like, okay. Yeah, she's just like, motherfucker, I don't give a fuck. Just go. Don't tell me. Why'd you have to tell me this?
Like, just, okay, bye.
And can we talk about just friendships? Here's a friendship advice. If you have to wake me up to tell me that you're about to take care of an action that has nothing to do with me, fuck you.
Or I'm going for a walk because I can't sleep.
I'm going for a walk because fuck you. I'll be like, hey, yeah, that's really great, Danny. That's really great that you're about to go take a walk. Fuck you. Fuck you.
And then I hang up the phone and I jump out the window at my second story.
Yeah.
And I don't have druid powers to slow my fall or weird seismic powers to like soften the dirt. So I would just break my legs.
Just break, yeah.
Would be weird. Fun. But yeah, it was a little bizarre. It was like this man. Why did you believe specifically? Why did he climb into her window and hang out for a bit doing it? Because it makes so little sense. I was just baffled the whole time. I thought there was like a plot to that. I was trying to suss it out, and I tried to go back a little bit. I tried to go forward a little bit, and none of it fit.
That page was completely irrelevant. You could have skipped that page. Mm-hmm.
But we couldn't just cut to him leaping out and leaving to go. You could have just stretched up the top. Like, why didn't they just make that bottom half of that page?
Jumping.
We just have him like eavesdrop, cut, and just be like he's later on. Yeah. So
weird. But he jumps down and he walks. He's walking around and he catches Colin, and he's at a gazebo and he's talking about MI-13 and he's talking about essentially all of what else is he talking about?
He's literally trying to broker an agreement between the government agencies, Clan of Cabra, and a lot of other magic users behind. We're literally getting it like a movie trope scene where he's talking on a cell phone out in the open and someone can clearly overhear him, even though that person who's about to overhear him is literally not going to be able to repeat anything verbatim, even though he heard it clear as fucking day from where he's standing. And he's going to be so fucking useless and inept in this whole scene. And this whole scene gets really weird and really strange.
So weird. He's so weird. So he's playing out all of the exposition of what his plans are. And
here now. I've got tabs on him. You can come get him anytime. I've got Betsy's here. He's literally telling all the Clan of Carver people, and they're still trying to use that as leverage to get MI-13? Or was it MI-16?
MI-13.
13, yeah. To work and actually back in.
He's trying to get some support.
Yeah, and it's really movie expletive like kind of so
yeah.
And of course Richter's like, whoa, he's looking at his face and like, I gotta report this to someone, even though that face looks so funny and how it's just like highlighted and just pops out in this weird, almost looks like I'm playing a computer game from the 90s.
It's weird. It's weird.
But he's not hiding anymore. Look, he's not even behind that plant. He's just standing out in the open.
Yeah, he's just standing out in the open. He gets noticed by Colin. Colin walks up to him, and he offers him a little bit of his alcohol that he has, and he talks about his last boyfriend, right? He's always just like, you know, My last boyfriend was super ancient and Celtic. You know, trying to relate to him a little bit because he was talking about being a druid. You know, he's just like, what are you doing out here? It's like druid stuff.
Yeah, just do druid stuff as the landscape changes as he gets closer to him because that wall disappears and all of a sudden he's just like right in front of him.
Yeah.
It's very weird how everything's like moving around. He's like, oh, you totally could have overheard what I was saying, but we're going to brush that off. I obviously said I'm setting you up and this is a trap, but what about, you know, like I'm into Celtic dudes and you're into druids. We can find a common ground there. And he's like, what are you talking about, dude? And he's like, you know, black actors, we got to stick together, man. And he's like, what? And he's like, I'm sorry, homosexuals are superpowers. We got to stick together, man.
What did you get this? It's so weird, right? It's like my whole take on this was like he gets caught and he's just like, oh fuck. And he's just like, you're gay, I'm gay. It was like wait, fucking you're wait. Hot, let's kiss. And he's just like, what? Yeah, let's kiss. And they kiss.
He's like, I'm a dude, so I could just mack you, right?
And yeah, like, I just mack you, just make out. It's just like, what? Well, no, why are you making out with me? No, let's just do this. This is happening. Let's do this.
Victor's so confused through all this. He's just like literally like the whole thing is unfolding and he's just baffled. It's like, he's here's like, the conversation. The guy comes up and he's like, you know, both of them are fucking superheroes, right? And he just like fucking just glomps on him.
It's so weird. He's just like, what? And he, yeah,
he looks it. He just says, I gotta fuck out of here. I gotta, I can't. For some reason, he's unable to process all of it.
It was so weird to me that this guy is just like, oh shit, I am caught. I know what to do. Hey man, you're fucking, you know, like fucking, you're awesome. We're right. Awesome. You want to fucking kiss? Well, let's kiss. I'm going to kiss. I'm not going to ask you. Let's kiss. We're kissing? Awesome. Yeah. You forgot about the thing that I just said, right?
Yeah. All you can think about is he's like, yeah, homosexual superheroes. We got to stay together. What?
You're just like, you're mutant and gay. I'm weird and possessed and gay. Together, we could be gay. And he's just like, what? And like, before he can even process it, he's just like making out with him. And he's just like, I don't, no. I'm gone. I'm out.
I like how he's like, he considers to be possessed by a demon parasite as like a superpower, too. He just quantifies it like that. At first, he was like, the way he talked about the mutants and when they were eating dinner and how it built towards this, and now he's like playing on it. He's like, you know, it's like, we're not even, those people, we're alike, but you and I, we're even more alike. Don't you get it? Rich is fucking blown. He's just like, what do I do?
What's
I
gotta get out of here. I don't know what's going on. Yeah, I don't get this. This is awkward.
Time's turned on. I'm running away now.
Yeah, so he books it. He books it. And
Afarecti runs off.
Yeah, he's a little chub, half chub. He books it to Betsy's room. Betsy bangs in her room. Betsy pops out. Betsy's rocking this weird lacy gown. She's also rocking a completely different art style than a few panels from above. Discuss.
It is bizarre to see how quick the differences show due to the amount of effort and manpower and people and just general workforce shifted mm-hmm. towards this kind
this
of
this is issue. Why you don't have this many people on one issue.
Too many cooks.
Too many cooks in the kitchen.
They're spoiling that broth. They're spoiling the shit out of it. It is weird though, but I dig. I see through her dress. It's like, I think it's super revealing. It's weird. At the top it has this non-see-through part, or it's like she's wearing two articles of clothing. Legs. But at the legs, it's all free. Mm-hmm. And those poofy shoulders. I don't even know what that is. It's the weirdest kind of nightgown. It looks like it would be normal clothes that got turned see-through. So you wanted something like kind of risque, but just dressed still the same, which is bizarre. It's like you're trying to split the difference without wearing the sexy clothes. You're like, what if you could just see through my clothes? Isn't that hot? I have a t-shirt on. It's clear. But it's such a bizarre change in artwork, too. Because then look at how hard they go cross-hatching in the background.
Yeah, the cross-hatching is very noticeable compared to Toe's artwork.
On the camel toe, they put cross hatching heavy on.
Ooh, yeah, I see it. I see it. Can't hide that. Can't hide that from me. That sounded terrible.
They're the ones who crosshatch it.
Yeah. You're the crosshatchers. Don't blame me on my erection, bitches. Yeah.
That's bitch blaming, Kyle. You just got canceled.
Yep. Thank you.
They're going to be outside your house 10 minutes.
It's not the first time.
They're already selling merchandise to protest you.
Yep. And, but Richter's like, yo, I think Colin's working with Covenant Kaza.
It's a fucking trap.
It's a trap. It's a trap. She's like, I think that's a wild accusation. He's all like, I heard him say that, bitch.
No, that's the thing. Yeah, it's even more worse. It's even more muddier than that. He literally says, I think we're getting set up. This doesn't seem like a good idea. It seems like we're a trap, but I'm not 100% sure. And it's like, how are you fucking not 100% sure? You heard him. You were right there. You went in fucking an earshot of him. Easy. Like, only like 10 feet at tops. And he's clearly talking on a phone facing towards you. In a gazebo that's supposed to amplify sound. You play music there. Like, what are you talking
about? Right.
That's so fucking ridiculous. And he's like torn on trying to convince her. And she's so reluctant. So inept. She's supposed to be the leader. She's supposed to be the new Captain Britain. And so all this heavy responsibility weighs on her. And she's just like apathetic about it. She's like, yeah, let's wait and see. It was like when they ate dinner and they did nothing. She's just like, let's wait and see. And even though Richter's torn, he still goes, no, it's a fucking trap. Like, even I can tell. I'm not 100% sure. But this dude is setting us up. Let's just do what we came to do and get the fuck out of here. Why are we even hanging out? Why are we just chilling in this dude's kitchen?
It's weird. It's weird. Is this just something we can't relate to as Americans, you think?
Maybe just like they're like, let's play it out.
Yeah.
Yes, that's how the appeasement went in like World War II. Most of Europe was just like, let's wait it out. Let's wait it out. Keep on
weird.
We can move this goalpost. Yeah, because it seemed very, very confusing. I didn't understand at all what they were trying to.
But it's funny because she's like, let's wait it out. And Richter's more or less just all like, bitch, we came to get skulls. Let's just do this.
She even tries to dissuade at one moment when they're first like talking about it. She's like, what got you flustered? And when she's like, were you too? And he's like, what does this have to do? So we both like men, but like, I'm trying to tell you this is like a trap. Like,
we both like men, but what does this have to do with this at all? Yeah,
it's almost like a downgrade of Betsy. Her characters in this issue took like a down spiral of her just ineffectiveness. She has that weird problem that Cyclops has sometimes.
Why does she need so much explained to her as a character before she takes action? That's what I want to know. What's her motivation behind that?
When she was Psylocke, she was involved with a lot of unique situations that required a lot of understanding and reaction based off of just stealing things and assassinating people and timing. So I get why she'd want to wait for certain things. But at this point, when there's a clear signal of survival is being jeopardized, she's reactive. She's never this inept, this extremely ineffective. It's painful to read. Because it almost seems like she's hollow. So now, like, once they stripped away Psylocke and they stripped away like any attempt to make her just her own character by piggybacking on this weird palette of Captain Britain, it's just kind of damaged her to the point where she's now just, she's a homunculus. She's like a homunculus. Mm. There's no validity to her character and her persona. She's just a shell that kind of functions just reactively, like programmed almost. Yeah. It's sad. And that's why it's like bizarre to see like Richter could be leading this team better than everyone else.
Right?
He's not that great.
I don't get it, but he finally gets her on board and they're like, all right, let's do it. Let's make it happen. So they assemble, right? You know?
Yeah.
To be my fucking Excalibur, whatever.
They do have that cool half bent over running X-Men pose. I like that.
Yeah.
And they're all drawn just slightly similar, but just like a little bit. Like, you could be playing the music in the background. This is that part in the episode where the music like picks up because they're like actually doing stuff now. They're like, all right, I'm talking. We gotta throw down. Oh man, this is not gonna end the way we expected.
No, it's not at all. But we get essentially Rogue wearing one of the werewolves, right? The skin of the werewolves.
Yeah, because she drained enough of his power to be able to manipulate it.
Yeah. And we get one of them kind of running off, right? And we get...
Well, she turns into it and then
runs off. She turns into it, yeah. She turns into
follows her. Yeah, and it's really creepy. Yeah. And they have a quick, like, debate about, like, well, wait, like, the werewolf has been raised in captivity. Like, they normally can't talk. Or, no, wait, they can normally talk, but because they've been dumbed down a little bit, they probably can't talk well. So they have to be careful if, like, Rogue talks too eloquently or too much like herself. So it's interesting. They're kind of going back and forth. And then he just keeps a fucking Bloodstone just calmly making, like, a whiskey on the rocks. Just hanging out,
just doing his thing, you know.
Explosion.
Jubilee. Fucking Jubilee.
Fucking fireworks.
Always fucking setting people off, and he's just like, fucking mutants! Yeah. Fucking, that drink he took, he was so patient to make, he just throws it, throws the whole bottle, throws the fucking ice bucket. The
tongs. Tong too.
And the tongs.
It's tongs go to the sky. Man. It's crazy.
Yeah, that's the, what is that? You think that's bourbon? Bourbon, whiskey, scotch.
It looks like that bottle kind of makes me think whiskey because just how the handle looks on the bottle and the shape. But then you're like, wait, we are talking UK. This is UK.
So. I would say like scotch. Ireland, you know, single malt, easy to get, you know, not expensive like it is for us. Yeah.
That definitely would be more accurate.
All right. There we go.
See, we sell that scotch. It's probably expensive because he's bougie as fuck. So.
Yeah, he's bougie as fuck. 18 years, dead baby, was fermented in there. All the good stuff you want in expensive alcohol.
Yeah, it's probably one of those things where he lives a very lavish life all the time and then just randomly like hunts bizarre interdimensional magical creatures. And he just drinks fancy like scotch and just hunts weird things all the time. Probably hunts like the brood. Like a week ago he was like hunting the brood.
Yeah.
Seems like the kind of shit he'd get into.
Right?
Yeah.
And we cut back, he runs out. You know, and we come back to Jubilee. She's like, don't make me do it. And and more or less, we get Captain Britain's like, yeah, you know, make me do it. I'll do it.
Yeah, they don't want to behead the werewolf. It's just Captain Brown. Jubilee's like fucking backing down, going, I can't do this. I'm not going to hunt. I don't even know how she'd do it. What are they going to make her like blow up its head? Like, how does that
work? Right, and throw it in its mouth, explode it.
She like Betsy gave her some shit about not bringing a sword. She's like, you should have brought a sword like me. It's like, you can generate a sword out of like psychic matter.
Itch. It's like, that's not fair.
What do you explain a bragging over there? Like, what's going on?
Right?
Fuck you. Better than me. You know what? Come get me a 4th of July starts. I'm going back to that dragon man.
Going back. but yeah, she whacks it, right?
Yeah.
She takes a whack at it. It's gone.
So they got another skull.
They got a skull. And that's what's happening. Yeah, as that's happening. And they hear some noise, right? They're like, it doesn't sound like a wolf, right? And as they hear this noise, we get Remy. We get
in his weird, like, Creole accent.
Like, that's me.
Madame.
And it's great. He has a skull in his hand, but he's being chased down by another one, more or less. And they're all like, what did you do? What did you do? And more or less, he's explaining, right? Like, Rogue hit him for it, but drained him and whatnot.
It was drained one of that guy, and they got the last one. They got that skull, and then she got separated from him, but she's chasing the guy that's chasing him, which turns out to be Damian Bloodstone, and like, almost full-on demon form. He's literally functioning as like the tongue of the demon. He transforms into it, takes this like crazy form. It was pretty it was pretty well illustrated as it went on. I do like how messy
It's pretty awesome illustration wise. Yeah, we get Colin as this like demon, right? But they at first mistake the werewolf chasing Gambit for Rogue, which it wasn't, right?
Yeah,
it's not Rogue. They're like, no, that's not Rogue. Run, bitch.
Yeah, he's like, we gotta deal with this. And then it turned out the one chasing him was also Bloodstone, which was being then in turn chased by Rogue, who then tackles him out of his mouth.
Out of the mouth, which is weird, right? So he makes his grand entrance, right? Out of this serpent's mouth, making this huge speech. And out of nowhere, just whipped out of the mouth, right? Wind. And then they're just all like, what? Oh, Rogue saved the day. Yay. Yeah. And here's the last skull.
Done. Pull it right out of his pocket.
Oh.
Kick him over. Weird. And say, well, let's go back. And Betsy made a comment about how Rogue has to take it easy because if he's killed, it'll turn into like an international snafu. So Rogue points out he could take a beating.
Yeah.
Oh, she also has this this weird, like, dumb comment that I didn't get at first, but I think I get what they're trying for. It says, two boys, one stone. Does that mean
two guys, one cup?
Or maybe two birds, one stone? But is the head of the thing a boy? Was that
boy? That makes more sense. I went way too.
I just thought she was implying that like the head of the werewolf was a boy. So it's like two boys, one stone. I thought the stone is the head. I don't even know. It's too hard to tell.
I don't know. I went dirty as fuck, though. You went more logical.
You could take it two girls, one cup. That would be funny if, like, see how it snuck in, like, a... That would be funny. I mean, if I was ever in a position like this, especially in the way things work with Marvel now and being owned by Disney and the scrutiny they go under, I would sneak something like that in.
Yeah, sneak it in.
Why not? I mean, they snuck that stuff in the old Disney movies. Like back in the day.
Yeah, that was always
fun. It's like a running joke that they get away with because of the over censorship and the need to make it more family friendly. So they're like, well, fuck this. I'll show you what I can put in here. But they got it. Mission complete.
They got it. They got the last skull. I like that Richter calls Betsy Posh Spice.
Yeah.
That's funny. But as they accomplish the mission, they're all kind of looking off, right? And we see, well, Remy first notices, right? And he's got, we got a problem. And they're all looking down and they're just like, ah, man, we can't kill it, right? And we don't know what this thing is, right?
No, it's a pup. It's a baby version of a werewolf.
It's a werewolf. It's a pup wolf.
Because it looks cute and it's small, their morality changes instantly. They murdered like their family, their whole family. No. They just killed their entire family. But they're like, oh, this is almost like they all turned into children all of a sudden. Like, I feel like Gambit would have been able to make that choice easy. I don't know why. Psylocke, the real Psylocke in this, and not the weird clone.
Not that Betsy. They brought
back. No, I mean, when Betsy was Psylocke.
Oh, gotcha.
Both of those, like the actual Psylocke they brought back. And when Betsy was Psylocke, would have easily made this decision.
Oh, yeah.
And they would have killed it. They would have killed it. I see objections from Jubilee, sure, but I don't see them like allowing that to matter. Richter used to straight up be a villain and murder people. You're part of Brotherhood of Mutants to do bad things. Like, they had fucked up shit, threatened to destroy the world many times. So I'm like thinking, okay, the werewolves are bad. They're saying it can't mate, so it'll be the end of the bloodline. But still, this whole dialogue that comes out of it and the whole thing that they push, it just made me cringe. This was cringe-worthy as fuck. The cringiest issue I've ever read.
This should have ended with, like, all right, who wants to do it?
And they left it there.
Or, like, Kid Omega coming out of nowhere and being like, I got this.
Yeah, just shotgun.
X-Force, bitch.
X-Force. Wolverine does it, Berserker Barrage.
Right. But we cut to, like, the whole time we don't know what this is that they're talking about, but then we cut to a little pup werewolf, but we cut to it with Betsy and with Apocalypse. Sorry, A. A.
He's A in these issues.
Dude, he's
we only call Apocalypse out of this because A in this fits him due to his being neutered a little. He's not the full name. He's just the first letter. He's just giving you the letter's worth. The first letter's worth of his prowess. That's the best way I look at it.
Yeah.
Though I do love that he's here.
Yeah.
This was not the Apocalypse I knew.
And he's a little mad, right? He's like, made myself clear. I said destruction. I require the destruction of the species.
Eradication.
Right? And yet here we are with this thing.
She's all flappant about it, half-hearted, and like it's hazardly about it. Like, hey, we found this. It's cute, so we're keeping it. So sorry. Suck on that. Ha ha ha. Look how cute it is.
Yeah, that's literally the only argument she seems to be making, right? I'm not really seeing like a purpose outside of this.
She does postulate the idea that this is a test for Apocalypse to see if he's willing to make a sacrifice. But the fact that they already come this far, murdered off its entire fucking family, and right? then turned around and all of a sudden put on morality hat of like, oh, just because it's a tinier version of that. Oh my gosh, it's so weird. Even though it's gonna grow, it's like a baby. It's the same fucking people.
You know what's gonna happen, right? You yes. know exactly what's how this is never gonna
works.
End.
Never fucking works. Never
and
works.
Even
this is she's Captain Britain. She's a part. She's in charge of so much important shit in the hierarchy of the British paradigm. Yet she's so fucking inept, so stupid, so childish, so feckless in her approach. It's so insulting to her. The legacy, the readers, and everything, and it just makes me white knuckled to the point where I don't even know what kind of troll we just read. This is
what troll. What do you think of Apocalypse's response to her? He says, "Mercy is its own kind of power. Perhaps it will suffice at a cost." What do you think of that response?
I think he's foreshadowing that it's going to blow back in her face.
This is dumb. More or less?
Yeah, it's going to blow back in her face and that's it. I was hoping he was going to reach out with that giant hand and just crush it. I thought I would.
Right?
And that's it. I don't care. It'd just be over with it and just move on because it was the whole point. What was the point of sacrificing so many for that? For nothing. Just to save an endangered fucking parasitic monster species. Well, not parasitic, but they wear your skin, so in a way they do kind of take from you. Did you see the problems in that? It's like the one person that they leave alive who's bit by a zombie. Like it's that trope again. There's so much of these lazy movie tropes that fuck up Excalibur all the time, and I bring them up almost every issue now because it's just lazy writing. That's why I'm like, what is gained here? I feel nothing was really gained with the character development and the whole shebang of what Apocalypse tried to do. We never get this closure now. It's gone.
Hear me out. We got Apocalypse. We got Baby Werewolf. I'm talking Kindergarten Cop with Apocalypse. No. Let's see it.
what is it? What was the one that Tom Hanks was in Turner and Hooch.
Turner and Hooch, yeah.
Turner and Hooch, but it's Apocalypse and Werewolf. Werewolf was called Hooch. We'll call him Hooch.
Oh, let's see a Marvel. Don't be a pussy.
Yeah. He's just going to use it to his advantage.
Yeah.
I don't know. Or is she going to raise it as a pet? Oh, no. They're going to Rachel. My bad. That's the part we're moving into.
Oh, yeah.
And here's this really. Oh, man. This was one of the worst ones. This garbage.
So we catch you the stars from the stars, and honestly, I read this, but I don't remember anything from this.
It's pretty much base, ambiguous, inspirational speech giving, like just really like baseline. Sounds good, like you know what the corporate speeches that are supposed to, good, but never actually say things. Connectivity, fundamental. Interconnected.
I'm rewatching Silicon Valley right now, and you get a lot of that text speech where it's just like where everyone constantly like we're working to change the world through innovative tech solutions.
I was just about to say, I was like, innovative. We're innovative. And it just like says it in the background in like big bold letters when he says it. like flashes on screen. Innovative.
Yeah.
Fucking goddamn. But yeah, that's exactly what it's like. This is a corporately like it's as if Sage generated herself. Like Sage just coughed it out and said, like, I can make this.
Yeah. Yeah, it's ridiculous. I don't even want to talk about it. Let's just move on to
We had to stop someone from saying nothing before, and we won't say nothing ourselves.
Yeah, that's fine. But we cut to Betsy hanging out with Rachel Summers. Interesting. And Rachel's just hanging out with the baby werewolf, right? And she's just like, it's cute. It's cool, right? I haven't seen anything like this since the lighthouse. It's a third lighthouse mention, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I wish they would just bring her full on as a member.
Yeah, because she was pretty much there, but just psychically throughout the whole like travel. It was weird. Rachel's attachment to this almost feels forced at times, but I do see the parallel here between her raising the werewolf and her being, she used to be pretty much a mutant hunter herself. So it has kind of its synergy, but it still feels kind of heavy, like forced, very forced. That's what it means.
Yeah. And they're making some like story about like keeping things alive that even if it wants to kill us and nonsense, stuff like that. And then we get into this concept of like, you know, sacrifice, right? And he's just talking about trust with Apocalypse, you know.
Yeah.
And if he's willing to truly sacrifice for us and whatnot. And then we go into your favorite part of this entire issue, right? What happens next? Yeah. What's going on next here? This last page we get an interesting imposing of ideology, that's for sure.
Yeah, you get editorializing sometimes in issues, and you get people trying to champion like their message that they like to throw on Twitter and things like that, because everyone's a keyboard activist now. It's more disingenuous when it comes up in comic books, especially being propagated by mass companies like Disney and conglomerates that don't really particularly give a shit about these things, but they will sell them to you. They will care if you will buy it, and that's it. Like, if they know that they can get you to pay for it, they'll market it to you, but they won't particularly give a shit of whether the relevance or what's going on.
Nope.
I get a good feeling of that in this, like a good just, ooh, we're strong, independent females, and this island needs more of us, and thank goodness we're an island of, or this world needs more of us because we're an island full of strong, independent women. Like, why are we highlighting this? I was like, wait. Was that the message of all of Excalibur?
Right.
I didn't realize that. Like, I'm like, okay. I'm like, oh, okay. If that's the message, then is that why the main villain was a homosexual man who didn't care for women? Is that the antithesis of what you hate and fear? Like, there's a lot of Freudian stuff going on in this issue all of a sudden, if that's the narrative they want to cherry top it with.
I can't tell if this is this weird injection of just Marvel's like ideology, or if it's just like this is our weird clunky forced way of saying, hey, X Factor number one coming out next week. Yeah.
Look at how diverse we are and proactive and progressive we are in trying to get you to buy Excalibur next issue or X Factor coming to a local comic book store near you. Enjoy the COVID.
I don't get that you're trying to sell to someone. I just want to know who you're trying to sell to, because you're not selling to me.
Yeah, I don't know many. I don't. This kind of soapboxing in Excalibur falls on deaf ears. This whole like, we gotta save these human skin wearing creatures. It's like a flesh eating virus. It's like literally a freaking
Yeah.
It's a Rick and Morty episode where they
want to... Morty episode where Morty is like, no, we got to save this. And he learns a valuable lesson by almost dying.
And wiping out the universe.
Or wiping out the universe or something like that.
Humankind, yeah. It turns into that. So it's all messy. It feels very ham-fisted. Like, how could you have put all these types of messages in this one issue when you were dragging out so much of your other messages and the story message in the latter part of the rest of Excalibur? You took all this time and then you threw this stuff in the end to kind of bookend the story and what went down at the Bloodstone mansion, and this is our conclusion. Muddled in all of that, the stone that was the pebble for Sword of X, and I'm this is the worst issue I've read out of all the Excalibur issues.
Oh damn.
Yeah, this was the worst issue out of all the Excalibur issues.
More so than the last one. I feel like the last one might have been worse than that.
At least the Flaming Horse to save it. It ended up basically enough where now I'm like, I wanted to end Excalibur forever after this, and we have to placate to it to get to Sword of X. It's like a challenge. I mean, I love X-Force and New Mutants, and a lot of those. And even in those, they have there are moments where they kind of editorialize the soapbox, but it's not ham-fisted, and it's not like three times in one issue where they're trying to like force three different narratives and three different virtue signal-based soapbox messages that are never going to fit in the story, and the story's already not fitting in itself in the arc. What's happening here? What's going on? It's a mess. Why is Richter in her room? Why did he even tell her? Why are they trusting this guy? Why was Betsy so just ineffective about standing up for her team and any of the progression?
Why are we constantly just hanging around? Yeah. Like, this is a mission, right? It should have been handled. But no, she decided to almost play this, I guess, like a they're trying to play politics more.
Yes, if you're trying to empower women in this issue, then how come the man who was a homosexual came up with the idea how to save the team and do everything and get out of it? And then she just coattails on what he did and plays dress up the whole time by like, look, I found this cool dress. And at the end, they have this really like strong talk about how they like, yeah, you know, like without you, Betsy, they could have got through it because you're a strong, powerful female. And we couldn't have done any of this without you. We need more people like you. And it's like, so then what does that make Richter? Like, she coattailed on him and pretty much downplayed all his struggles, came up off of him and just played the stereotypical female. But you're telling me this is supposed to empower women? It almost seems like it's an insult to them and the rest of the people that you would want to try to fight progressively for. I get it that you have your particular soapbox message that you want to say, and then layered in it is the other ones that kind of play into that. But it seems like you're trying to throw the other ones under the bus just to better your own narrative. And I don't like that in a book. I don't like that in a comic. I don't like it in a movie. I don't like it in anything because it's disingenuous. Never trust someone who's bitter. Never. Anyone who's jaded or bitter, never trust them. Their intentions. Never trust their intentions.
No?
No. No, if you're bitter about something that you're writing about, I don't trust your intentions. Because if you're throwing other people on the bus that would be considered allies to you, then obviously there's no limit to what you would do to get what you want. You're out for revenge. Right. It's a vendetta thing. That's what I mean. It's like their end game is much more dangerous than what they're trying to do. And even though in the beginning, the guys of what they're trying to do may look good, it's just like they're shitting all over all the other people who worked on this issue. And there's a ton of people who worked on this issue. Can we talk about
so many people?
Can we talk about how many people?
I think we might have talked about that.
Let's see. We got 1, 2, 3, 4 people inking this issue. 2 people penciling this issue when normally there's 1 writer, 1 penciler, and 1 inker in most of the issues that we've read. And there's a litany of people working in tandem to bring this issue. And that's just the first half of the first 3 actual quotas of putting the issue together. It goes on even more and more and more, and we got a double teams on those as well. I just don't understand why all this effort was put into this issue. and they couldn't actually find a way to work in cohesion with each other. It seems like they're working against each other. I could read at times that this story was written by way different people or being designed and constructed and storyboarded by way different people at moments. Like two people in a room talking about like, let's do this and let's write here. Let's go with this. And maybe Hickman pops in and every now and then and other people pop in and out and that gets bled into the story and the narrative and the imagery. Because that weird, like, who the fuck wrote the to the stars from the stars part? Who wrote that?
Sure, I want to know that. I mean,
with any of the other story, that seemed like way different than the letter. The letter part felt like that was like an editorial choice. Like maybe someone, you could even go all the way to Cebulski, but I would say if Hickman's head of X, then maybe he pushed this in. But I feel like this is a lazy way to start that domino effect. But even then, so that's his input. So you got multiple people coming at this. To put their story into it or their emotional grandstand.
Why? Why do we need this? Why do we need this? Can't we just tell good stories about people like struggling through diversity? Or not diversity, adversity. Sorry.
Or both. You could have that, they're struggling through that, but in a way that makes sense and fits the story.
It doesn't make sense, right?
It's shoehorned in this one. They're trying too much. They're just trying to stack it on. You feel like you're watching an episode of Degrassi or something. Like what's happening in here? Like, oh, you kids can't all have these problems. This is not one school. This is obviously a show about melodrama. This is bullshit. You're writing for teenagers now, so of course you're going to make everyone's dad also murdered their mom and raped them when they were younger. Oh, shit, you too? So it's like that narrative writing is messy, and it's too many stories try to get through one door at once, so it becomes stuck, and you can't tell where to follow or who to root for or who's developing, because then it speeds up their development in a way that you don't see it and you don't understand it, so there's no actual development that you can measure. I don't. From the beginning to now, what has Betsy changed? Really, she just seems like she's more confused and messy.
Really don't know her purpose still.
What's her drive? Like, I've never had her give a truly definitive speech on what she needs to do and what her end game is and what her stance is on the mutants. I know that's going to come up at some point, but it feels like at this point she should have already been more fleshed out, more explained. We can't be in. You can't tell me she's the new Captain Britain, and we're going into Excalibur issue 9, and she's still like the Wonder Bread of the Excalibur crew. She's blander than that baby.
I don't know.
At least the baby turns into a dragon,
right? Yeah, Shogo changed into a dragon. Why aren't we seeing like this awesome like story about the Braddocks? You know, we got one with the amulets, one with the sword, dual teaming. Working together.
That would be much better, and that should be Excalibur should be tied to all this. But instead, we're getting a weird poison, maybe not poison dinner with a clearly trap dinner with the Jubilee waxing and waning mutants' rights with Bloodstone. And the whole time you're like, what is happening here? How did they get to this point?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, they got to this point because they just decided to go here. The story needed to move along. Poetic license. And then you just get all the poetic license over and over again, and you're supposed to eat it up, and they're supposed to say this story. Because they had to, because they realized they were dragging it out too long, so they had to start cutting it faster and faster to finish it up. Sword of X is coming out. We gotta get it out. We gotta wrap it up. Wrap it up.
Any positives to this?
I kind of dug the cover, except for Apocalypse's head.
Right.
That's it. It's a mess. It's not even a completed issue. There's like parts in between that are not there. It feels like everything is so important, and the way Apocalypse approached that situation and the way Betsy approached that situation, it seemed childish. It seemed like a joke. If what he's doing is better for mutants and is something that's going to save them, then I would say trust him. If you want to trust him, then watch what he does and see how it plays out.
Yeah.
Obviously, you could tell when he's going to betray you because he's done it before and you've seen it happen. But it's never been in the sense of he's betraying you because he wants to kill you or destroy you. He's betraying you because you're placating to the humans. Yep. So he betrays you. But you're not fucking placating the humans. Charles is not doing that. That's not happening. The MO here on Krakoa and the current status quo of the mutants is we are superior. And that is what we are.
It's Remember the days when we were talking about Charles Xavier? I haven't talked about Charles Xavier in a while. Have you?
No, he has been very absent, except maybe in like small little glimpses and moments.
Right. In
the other issues. But very absent in the majority of his issues.
I am so upset. Yeah, so frustrated.
The paradigm between him and Magneto and Moira was probably one of the best.
Iconic.
Well, just the relationship and dynamic. The relationship dynamic that was being portrayed in
story real time. Words, yeah.
Yeah. Beautiful. Stories. I liked it. All the stuff we got now, there have been some moments close where there's some things play off of each other and we're like, hey, I like their chemistry and things like that. But the weird paradigm power conduit between the three of them and just how well entrenched it was and what they're doing here really made me excited to just hear them talk about stuff and wax and wane their ideas. Now I'm like, oh, now we got Betsy kind of getting Apocalypse to humble himself for the sake of her posterity. Like, what do we do? What is this? Like, what is this going to pay off? You said that it was to prevent some sort of catastrophe and gain a foothold from the mutants in the greater scheme. So let him do it. Why stifle him?
Why stifle indeed?
Like, we could take the blood from this werewolf and we could cure all mutant diseases forever and be great. And they're like, yeah, but the werewolf has to die. And it's like, yeah, but if we let it grow old, it could steal the skin of one of us to go out into the world and steal the skin of more people and stuff like that. Like, shouldn't we stop that? Nope. All right. Issue over.
It makes no sense. Makes no sense. But yeah, issue over indeed. That is it for this issue. It is a weird one and it sucks because we gotta keep going because it's leading into the stupid Ten of Swords. And I don't know what's gonna happen with that. I'm down to bail, honestly, halfway through if we need to.
I mean, we could try Ten of Swords and see where it goes and we could play with it and we could try Excalibur up until that point. I imagine at some point they'll phase out Excalibur because that's been the curse of Excalibur. It never goes on forever. That's a limited series. If you think it'll be an ongoing one for 5 years from now, no. The only way that's possible is if it ended in like a month and then 5 years from now they picked it up again. Like that's how that would work. But, I mean, I guess we can just stomach it out. I know we're going to be skipping like the Empire ones and those other kind of like that. They had a comic book day one. I mean, maybe
thank you. I'll talk about that now. So I'm caught up in Empire. Oh my god, is that a garbage fire? Whoo! Story wise is, I don't know what's happening. Fucking Captain Marvel is a fucking what is it? What are they called? The Kree? I can't think of them right now.
Kree intelligence.
No, they could. They're like Judge Dredds for the Kree.
Oh, the Kree. Execution. No, accusers.
Accuser. She becomes.
They wrote under the accusers. Yeah.
She becomes an accuser. And I'm just like, I am out of here.
Yeah, that's bad news. Yeah, it's all supposed to be about how Hulkling is like the king of the Kree and Skrull Empire.
Yeah. Yep. Yep, it is.
The same thing we talked about earlier with the X-Men being versus this and the Avengers versus that, they've taken the same approach with the space stories where now it's like, how can we rebrand Annihilation? How can we rebrand the Secret Invasion? How can we rebrand the Kree Skrull War? This Kree Skrull War! This Kree Skrull War true, and we could make the Kree and the Skrull to be on the same team this time, and then they'll fight other people. So it's everybody versus the Kree and the Skrull, and then you're not all the way Skrull Krees that'll break off, and we can have a side series about that. I'm gonna sell some books.
Now get this. Check this out. Try this. Something new.
All right.
You be creative. Do something unoriginal.
Maybe do something original. Because they always do something That's their foundation, is unoriginality, is retread. Like that you can still take the way a character is and put them in new settings because they haven't experienced everything. Yeah. It's not like they've all done it and they've all played the tunes. There's plenty of things, scenarios, and ways that you could overlap other characters and have them interact. I mean, how many team-ups have we had with the same people over and over again? There's plenty of other people you can team up that are strange that work.
Sure. All right, but we'll never see that anytime soon.
I mean, look at Excalibur. Richter worked in Excalibur. He took on that druid persona. That was one of the cooler things to come out of Excalibur. I like that was character fucking development for Richter.
Yeah, there you go.
That was good. But for some reason, when Betsy put on that weird Special Olympics like suit, I don't know. I don't know what happened, man. I just don't know what happened. Like, I lost the ability to see any definitive growth here.
Yeah. So Empire was garbage. Free Comic Book Day X-Men was a very, very creative way to give me an ad for Ten of Swords. It was pretty much Emma Frost giving a tarot card reading, and each card gave you little teases of Ten of Swords. So it was pretty much an ad, more or less.
So Emma Frost has Precog powers now?
Guess so. I don't know. I don't know why they went with that. Like, yeah, it opened up a lot more questions than answers.
When they just want to use blindfold or something. Oh, no, wait. They can't do precogs.
They can't do precogs. That's the thing. She is the precog. She's the closest thing to a precog on Krakoa, I guess.
But she's not.
But she's not.
She's got psychic. She's got, you know, all the things that go being powerful, mega level psychic, not the additional like other psychic powers, but she can like do astral plane and that kind of weird shit.
Yeah.
And she can turn to diamonds, but I don't understand. Like,
she hasn't ever, well, she's done that twice maybe throughout.
Well, had one rule. She said no precogs. She said never allow precog. That's the one.
I'm into Emma's diamond form.
Well, I just don't understand how they're even getting away with her being a precog in general. That it just seems like the people who were putting that out to build Ten of Swords didn't pay attention to powers of ten.
That's Teeny Howard. Teeny Howard, talk to us. Let us know. Let's talk about it.
Oh, man. So
come
wait.
On the podcast.
The Teeny Howard? You mean the Teeny Howard that gave us such hits like Excalibur issue 8?
Yeah, man. Yeah, that Teeny Howard, man.
I wonder if Teeny Howard's a feminist.
Good question. Good question. Now, okay, this is a good thing. This is before we wrap up. Does it suck, or are we the assholes because she is the only female writer in Dawn of X, and this is one of the more irritating of the books? Right, and ultimately it comes down to good writing. We're not getting good writing whatsoever, right? So why is that? Why can't we get that?
Because they're trying to shoehorn in like a form of tokenism to fill the quota to have the writing be represented to match that checkbox, but that doesn't equate quality, that just equates quantity, and that's not anything that's ever a good sell when it comes to art and just these mediums in general. It's only going to hurt and degrade it as time goes on because you're going to chase mediocrity and just a piss poor narrative that is never going to be flushed out due to being held to a higher standard of what's the quality here? Who's the best? Like, can we get someone in here who could write things, or do we just need to get someone here who could write? Like, it doesn't matter what they can write.
That's frustrating.
Can they write? Okay.
Boxes, right? Because like, I would like to see an awesome writer that is also all of these boxes, but when you go the other way, where you're going like, oh, no, we're going boxes first, then the writing comes second.
Yeah, because you can find people that fit those criteria that still...
Exactly.
So why are they chasing that? Why are they chasing the talent? If they really want someone to fit that quota, why can't they chase it so it's someone who fits that quota and doesn't hurt the brand, doesn't hurt the story, doesn't hurt the art? Why are we just going to give the reins? It's like we're given participation trophies and trying to sell them to people. It's like, buy your participation trophy. Don't just get it. You have to buy it. What the
fuck? So you're saying there's a price that we could give to Marvel and we could penetrate that inner circle, is what you're saying.
It obviously you could attempt, but I feel like there's a lot of self-sustaining systems that are built around it, going from things like HR and even just the narrative online that polices people out of those situations, break in. So it's hard because people will quickly throw you under the bus too, or they'll agree with you.
They sure will.
But they won't agree with you out loud. And so it turns into nothing. Apathy is the glove in which evil slips its hand. That's just how it is. So, we get more stuff like this where obviously they wanted to tack in that agenda, but they didn't want to tack in any good writing. What the fuck? What are you going to do? I'm lost in wanting to even be optimistic about Sword of X.
Yeah.
And see if that's going to have any good moments and highlights. I have a feeling we're going to get more of just, we're going to rush the story along and wrap it up without concluding any of the plot points that you probably wanted to see happen.
Probably would be my guess. It seems like based off of the tease, we're going to get some information about the whole Apocalypse and his war bastard children on the... on the second, what's the island that's not Krakoa? The other one?
Oh, Magneto had one that was called Genosha.
Not that one. Remember when the two islands fucked?
Oh, yeah. I can't remember. But yeah, they both came together and they, yeah.
Yeah.
That was like issue 2 or 3 or something like that of X-Single issue.
So we might get more answers to that, but other than that, it seems like we're not really getting any progress forward, momentum.
For Excalibur, definitely. Some of the other stuff is pushing forward, and we're getting character development. A lot of people have changed and grown, and I've seen some interesting things. Beast has taken an interesting turn for the worse, but at least he's got something to show. Yep. That's actually, I could quantify and point to and look like, well, yeah, from here to here, he went from this to that. Betsy kind of... like, her line would just be a dot. And there she is. She came out of the oven, was done, and that was it.
It's like, you know, what you do is you describe all of the successes, and then you go, like, and then there's Betsy.
Yeah, Excalibur, out of all the groups that set up to do things, Excalibur was the only group that didn't accomplish their task.
Yeah.
Look at all the shit that New Mutants got done. Look what X-Force got done. X-Force. Look what X-Men and even just straight up. Freaking even Fallen Angels went through and did their shit. Fuck you. Fuck. Even Fallen Angels got their shit done.
Yeah, whatever happened to that
demon guy. This is Fallen Angels quality right here. I would expect this story to tie to that better. Like, this would be the crossover.
Man. It's, what's the word? It's
concerning.
Sure. Yeah, it's concerning for sure. It's definitely concerning, right? Because these are pretty... I want to see these characters succeed story-wise.
Yeah, because I've seen that muddy writing appear in Marauders sometimes. It seems like Excalibur and Marauders, they're trying to riff off of each other in a few ways. Whereas the other ones feel like they're actually being trying to be fleshed out in the form of an actual comic book story that will conclude in a way where you're like, okay, like things got shook up, but also things make sense. And all the questions that I had were answered. And I know what happened to the fucking Flaming Horse because I saw the fight go down.
It's funny. I don't know. What do we need? Do we need Percy to walk in and like take off his shirt?
I need Hickman to come in and say, like, you want to know what happened with the Flaming Horse? That's important because the Flaming Horse was a plot line that I plan to fix 2 years from now, and he's gonna fix it, and it's gonna be the greatest thing ever. Because that's what he does. He'll nod and it'll come back and you'll be like, I can't believe it. I can't believe it.
There's a horse. Oh, the horse that I was complaining about for like 3 weeks and then forgot about for 5 years. Fuck.
I meant to use that. I really did, I swear.
Oh, Hickman, you sneaky, sneaky bitch. I trust you, Hickman. I don't trust the people around you, and that's the problem we're seeing right now. And that is a problem we're seeing with Excalibur. But nonetheless, we are going to hang in there because it leads into Ten of Swords. And we are here to help you, folks. We are going to accept the pain, the burden. We are going to dive deep into Dante's Inferno for you, folks, to tell you. And we're going to come out of this and go like, yeah, yeah. Shouldn't have read it. Probably.
Don't front to them, Kyle. We're both sadists and we know it.
Yeah, yeah. We're gonna be half stock the whole time throughout reading it, most likely. So, you know. But we're here for you to give you the truth nonetheless, regardless of our personal kinks.
That's what
I like to think so.
Yeah. We're gonna get down to the nitty-gritty. We're gonna dig deep. In the dirty bowels of Dawn of X. The side that no one wants to see.
Right.
The Excalibur side.
Any final
can't be
thoughts.
All fun again.
Any final thoughts on Excalibur?
Nah, just like I said, I enjoyed the cover.
I enjoyed that cover. Marcus Toe, keep up the great work. And again, Teeny Howard, if you can get Marvel to like pitch them on a light novel. Like, let's see it. I want to see your fantasy light novel. I feel like I don't want to see a fantasy. What is your opinion on fantasy comic books? I'm not a big fantasy comic book person in general. I was never a big, I think I said this once, but Excalibur in general wasn't big for me back in the day, even though I did read a little bit of it. But I feel like it would be great in the written form.
I don't typically have any fantasy oriented comic books. Most of them are on the sci-fi end. Some of them have magic in them in a sense, but most of the story is pretty grounded in usually sci-fi or psychological concepts.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess you get a lot of the like the mangas and things like that. Some of those do.
Yeah, good like point. Yeah, like anime stuff, and so, manga, yeah.
Yeah, like I would consider like Death Note's fantasy, and you know? I thought that was phenomenal in manga form, but when they turned it like the animated anime. And then the live action, and then they made the American live action, and I kept saying every time, I was like, this is not gonna be, you can't keep changing the medium and think that it's gonna be gold. Like, it's the same medium, you're just changing the palette. The American and the Japanese ones were both equally bad in the same way. Like, no different. So, you know, that it just that lends itself better to that kind of substance. I like a good fantasy manga, but in comics, usually sci-fi. Usually it's like the X-Men,
Marvel,
all that kind of stuff.
Same. So, yeah, I'm telling you, man, Teeny Howard, go in there. Go to C.B. Cebulski. Be like, now, listen, I know we're into making pictures. Get this out. Hear me out. Check this out. Listen to my pitch. Words.
Lots of words. Well, the original release of what was that movie with Tom Cruise in it where he kept repeating his life every time he died?
And
he
was yeah,
that was originally a light novel.
That was a light novel that was eventually a manga and then turned into the live action that we know and love. Live, Die, and Repeat, I think,
yeah.
It was originally named, and it was called Edge of Tomorrow.
Great movie, actually.
Yeah, I love that movie. Yeah, actually.
Oh yeah, but that don't you all feel that that's a bit of a like a pastiche to that Run Lola Run?
A little bit. Yeah, I see it.
It's just instead of that, it's like doing the like what would you do each day over and over again? But they just took it and ran. It's a it's not like a ripoff.
Not a pastiche. But
I feel like he watched that movie.
Oh yeah.
I feel like he watched the movie. They wrote the book. He probably was influenced by it.
For sure. Definitely. Yeah.
Which is kind of akin to what happens with Moira.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
There which then go. That lady who wrote that book about that girl said that he straight up ripped her off. which was dumb because it was like, you don't have like a, like, you don't own the rights to Rebirth. The reincarnation is not something you have like trademarked.
That's funny.
If she's gonna sue Hickman, then everyone can go back for generations and probably sue her from a bunch of different lineages of people who wrote like religious philosophical texts.
Yeah.
So that's just funny when it comes to stuff like that. But yeah, I could see being influenced by those things, but no one can just truly like stealing the idea 100%. They may, or just repurposing it, rebranding it, or reworking it into a new thing, something random. Because nothing that Hickman did with Moira felt like anything else that I'd ever seen in X-Men ever. Before.
Yeah.
And they do weird, wacky time travel stuff, weird, insane concepts. But Hickman was like, hey, what about this weird reincarnation aspect where it's more seated and deep, and it kind of helps flush out the fact that the canon is messy in the X-Men and Marvel Universe throughout the years. So it was like actually a pretty good idea to fix like a problem, at least attempt. I mean, it's not flawless.
Not the greatest.
Yeah, but you can't fix everything, but it's an attempt and it's original.
I thought it was a great, great attempt at
not only ambitious, but it was probably one of the more fresher things to come out of Marvel in 10 years.
Oh yeah, definitely, definitely. And boy, do I miss that. Boy, do I miss that.
Hopefully we get that back. We'll get New Mutants soon enough, and I think he was writing New Mutants. He's definitely, we'll be doing X-Men in a few, and he was writing that. Cable. Who writes Cable issue 1?
I have no idea who's writing Cable.
Okay, let's see then. I was hesitant about that, but you showed me some previews, and I'm like, okay.
I'm still hesitant even with that preview, but we'll see how it goes. We got that, we got Hellions, we got X Factor now, which, wow, okay, so much ahead of us, folks. But we're gonna try to get some of this new stuff to you as we say goodbye probably to some of this old stuff. Mm-hmm. Let's be real.
Yeah, eventually it's gonna hit a point.
Yeah, so
I mean, they run Excalibur parallel sort of X, I would be like, let's just skip it. We got some X going. That's all we need to know.
Yep. Yeah. Same. So we'll see how it goes, and if that is the case, we'll give you the abridged version. But until then, that'll do it for us this week, folks. Remember, folks, the robots are going to kill you. So be sure to eat some gluten before then.
Because gluten stuff. Even if you're allergic.
Yeah, fuck it. Just gluten it up. Why not?
If you're gonna die by your own hand, you know?
Yeah. Get down, bitches.
Some cookies.
Ooh, cookies. You know, I've been doing personally cookie dough. They sell it now. Edible cookie dough. And I don't eat cookies now because I'm just like, I'll just go for the cookie dough. But that's a whole nother story, folks. So go get some cookie dough before you die. Get out of here, bitches. Get out of here.
Heat and I is like the best of them.